This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row Studios, in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Not just any podcast,
it's the
Dave.
It's pre-BlazerCon special.
Oh, Dave, I've got to say.
Yeah.
The tingling
yeah.
does not even come close to capturing my emotions
now. Is it a tingling? Describe the whole more than tingling.
It's an incredible mixture of tingling.
The aspera and of emotions
you've
got going
on. Complete and utter numbness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like a intense tingling.
Yeah.
But I can't feel it.
Yeah.
I haven't felt my legs, I think, in about 6 days.
Yeah, I'm having a recurrent dream that, one, I'm not wearing pants for the whole of BlazerCon. I forgot to put my trousers on. And secondly, that BlazerCon isn't about football. It's about something else. And I spend the whole time trying to figure out what it's about. And I don't feel very prepared to talk about it.
I've got serious, serious nightmare cycles now. I had one last night. I slept for about an hour and a half last night. I dreamt a lot about Ovi, who came on our show.
Ovechkin.
Just answering every question. Obviously.
Yes.
What a bloke.
He was great, though.
And then I switched. I tried to repress that cycle of obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
If my name was Ovechkin, obviously would probably be my favourite word as well.
And then I just had terrible panic dreams about the pie supplies being insufficient.
That would be a big problem. Pies and beer.
Running out of pies and just, you know, it brought down Marie Antoinette and it could well... Bring down the lack of pies.
Yeah.
We will talk about BlazerCon, David. We will talk about it because I am quite excited.
Okay.
I think it's the second biggest thing to happen to football in Brooklyn since David Beckham named the kid after the borough.
And apparently he named his kids after the places his kids were conceived. And the question is, was he in Brooklyn when he conceived or was he just had a view of Brooklyn when he conceived Brooklyn Beckham?
Probably came within about 20 clicks of having a child called Staten Island.
Yeah, you never know. Queens.
I love a child called Staten Island.
Yeah.
We've got serious stuff to talk about, though, before we get to BlazerCon,
okay.
David. Massive. I've been doing a lot of thinking. I've been doing a lot of soul-searching also in my waking hours because I haven't slept so well.
You've had so many more waking hours.
I have spent a lot of time padding around my apartment at the early hours, wanting to kind of use that time in a constructive fashion. So there's been a lot of soul-searching, much of it triggered by Phil Collins coming out of retirement.
I know. David. Exciting, Rog.
He came out of retirement a couple of weeks ago, and I almost brought it up on the pod because when I read the news that Philip Collins felt the need to inflict his peculiar kind of virus of entertainment back on a paying or non-paying public.
Yeah.
I felt sick in my mouth. I really had an incredibly strong reaction, but I didn't talk to you about it on the pod because I thought it was just me. And 95% of this pod is just me talking about my crap anyway.
Yeah.
Didn't want to go, you know, past that threshold.
Yeah. But it's like a therapy session.
But then producer Lexi drew my attention to this news story. New York Magazine.
Oh, yes. There's a petition to stop Phil Collins from coming out of retirement, Rog.
Yeah.
Phil Collins must be stopped.
That's what the headline is.
A petition to the United Nations. To the United Nations, of all people. Asking...
Get me Kofi Annan.
Asking the government to deter Phil Collins from having a comeback after 4 years of retirement. It goes on. Phil Collins has announced he is no longer in retirement. There is far too much suffering in the world as it is. This must be stopped. As of Sunday afternoon, the petition only needs 860 more signatures. By the way, we could do that at BlazerCon. To reach its 5,000 signature goal, though it remains to be seen whether the UN will actually step in and stop Collins from recording a new album. The petition was created by someone named Brian P., spelt P-E-E, who really, really dislikes Phil Collins and clearly does not want another day for you and me or Mike Tyson in paradise. There is far too much suffering in the world as it is. This must be stopped.
What exactly is the UN going to do?
Yeah, well,
send some peacekeeping force down to Florida.
Sky blue helmets.
To invade Collins's little demi-mansion.
What is it that you dislike so vehemently about Phil Collins?
Well, that's my first question.
Yeah.
2:30 in the morning, 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I realised I actually admired his drumming with Genesis. I actually enjoyed his acting in Miami Vice. I think he was in one episode. He was very good. There's something about him I don't like that I just physically can't stand.
He's not a bald denier.
No. He is a smarmy, repugnant bloke.
Really?
A peddler of faux emotion.
Uh-huh.
And I think the thing that sets me off is that He's neither this nor that. It's when he drums and tries to be a lead singer. I think he's perverting the order of the world with a headphone on. I just don't think that is okay. And now I know that I'm not alone, David. When I read this article, I know that it's not just me, but I stand with the likes of Brian P.
Okay, just one question. Are you sure that you are not Brian P? Because if you were going to come up with a different name,
yeah,
I think Brian P.
No, it wouldn't be Brian P. I would have come up with Michael Davis would be the name I'd use.
That's true.
A name of strong authority. But then, Dave, come 4 o'clock in the morning, after thinking about Mr. P and is clearly a man of action, I felt dark. I felt dark inside. Even though I've always wanted to fight Phil Collins. I think on this show before I've said how I'd like to beat Phil Collins with Eric Clapton. I'd like to pick Eric Clapton up by his feet and just use him as a baseball bat to batter Collins. But then I got overwhelmed by the vitriol of my emotions, David. And I asked myself, if I was wearing sackcloth, I would have rent it probably in like a medieval kind of Chaucerian way. And I just said to myself, life's too short. I mean, by the way, do you have a list of enemies that you wish bad on? Like Arya Stark, Joffrey, Cersei, Walder Frey, Merwin, Trant?
No, not
you
really.
Because I want to empty mine now, David.
How many are there?
Collins.
You've actually got a prepared list. Okay, here we go.
Bieber.
Yeah.
Bieber's on. I'll talk about Bieber in a second.
I think he's back. I like the new music. I like the direction Bieber's going in.
Yeah. I didn't like him. Originally, I hated him all the more when he put an Everton shirt on for a series of press talks.
Yeah, well, he's had a Chelsea shirt on too. But you liked him more then.
I just want to say on the podcast, because it would be good for me, welcome back, Phil Collins. You make many people, especially Steven Gerrard, very, very happy. I want to try and see the good in people, David. Can I ask you this question?
Let me just make a note of that to remind you of that several times during this forthcoming podcast.
Where is the burden of proof with people, David?
Yeah,
I had a friend of mine growing up, Victoria. She was like Mother Nature. I was slightly darker. When we were like 12, 13, we used to argue. She told me she treats people as good, all good, until they prove otherwise.
I'm exactly the same. I trust people.
You do?
I trust before people don't have to earn my trust. They have my trust early. It's only when they break my trust that they lose it.
You're naive. Yeah, that's Arsene Wenger levels of naivete.
I would rather be that person than a person who is naturally untrusting to
And I'd say to Vicky, and be more suspicious. Hold people at arm's length until they prove they can be trusted. But now I'm trying to change from that.
Where's Vicky now?
I don't know if you're listening. Vicky Matteson.
Yeah.
Get in touch and weigh on this issue. Because I'm now trying to just get rid of arbitrary enmity.
Okay.
Towards people like Justin Bieber.
Okay.
I don't hate him anymore.
Okay.
I just feel sorry for him.
Okay.
Do you know why?
Why?
I read this week that whenever he sits in a restaurant, his people make sure that the establishment immediately switches over the music to an all Bieber soundtrack.
Really?
The New York Magazine wrote he's used to the universe eagerly morphing to his presence. That's a nice highfalutin way of saying they changed the music to Bieber music. It's like Queen Elizabeth only singing English towns with brass bands, red carpets, hundreds of children waving Union
Jacks.
Freshly
scrubbed.
That's not a way to live a life. Got to mix in some boredom, some loneliness, some pie.
Talking of music, Rog, I went to see on Sunday night GFOP Dave Barnes, who I met through Twitter when he...
Tinder?
No, through Twitter. I met him through Twitter. He's a very happily married man, Rog. I met him through Twitter when he was tweeting about Arsenal, and I found what he said really funny and looked him up and realized he's sort of an award-winning, very, very well-thought-of singer-songwriter based down in Nashville. I went to a show at the City Winery this Sunday. Amazing, amazing, amazing music. If you like people like Ryan Adams, if you like that sort of alt-country singer-songwriter style, look out for Dave Barnes. Buy his EP. He's got a new record coming out next year, I think.
Nashville,
he was amazing.
A Nashville crooner.
Massive Arsenal fan.
It's a huge Arsenal fan.
Massive
That's America.
Fan.
That is America.
A massive Arsenal
and
fan.
And his whole band.
Yeah, all the people who he is surrounded by, particularly his sort of supporting act, are two people from North London. The guy is a huge Arsenal fan. Like, all the people around his world seem to be massive Arsenal people. His dream is to meet Mesut Ozil. That's what he really wants more than anything else in his life.
Should get Peter Cech to play drums for him on his next tour.
Exactly, but never should branch out into singing, into being a lead singer.
Dave Barnes, just some advice. I'm not a music agent, but I'd probably change his name. If I were Dave Barnes.
You think Dave Barnes is a bit normal?
Dave Barnes sounds like the kind of plumber electrician. I'm Dave Barnes. If you've got plumbing and electrician needs in Wigan, in Dave the greater Barnes. Wigan area, call me, Dave Barnes. 1-800 Dave Barnes.
Or perhaps somebody who would have an advertiser hoarding at Burnley is Dave Barnes.
Yeah. Just if he, I bet you, if he changes it, he may be doing very well.
He's doing very well.
So I'm going to show he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
But I would change my name to something like the Americans are like Killer Diggins.
Yeah.
Killer Diggins. And I bet you he should release an album like that woman that wrote Harry Potter.
J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. Robert Galbraith.
Oh.
She came out with a different me.
Yeah.
So I think Dave Barnes, keep J.K. Rowling it with Dave Barnes.
Okay.
Just put a control group. And put an album, just one under the Killer Duggins.
Okay.
And see, just measure.
Okay, good.
You can thank me later.
We will see. Okay, back to BlazerCon.
Sold
Rog.
Out. It is
we
surreal
sold the final
to me,
three
David.
Tickets.
It is surreal to me, David.
Yeah.
When we both moved here in the 90s to now, just how much America loves football. And just as importantly, how much global football loves America.
I moved here in 1989, by the way. It's even the 80s I moved here. That's how old I am.
We were asked yesterday by a writer if we just at this point, because there is so much that we're working on, so many tiny, tiny details, not just about pie. Some of them are to do with Guinness and Tweed Minis.
Yeah.
We just got...
Spoiler alert.
Photo of the world's first Tweed Mini.
I know.
Which has been about...
Not the last.
And we got asked, do you just want it to be over right now? Was the journalist question. I've got to say... Just the prospect right now of GFOPs travelling from all over the country just to be with us and to examine the questions that we care about. When will there be more Americans watching English Premier League game broadcasts here than in England? How, you know, MLS, can it build its TV rating while English Premier League, while Champions League are kind of bombarding these shores on home turf? The women's game, can there be a cycle of club football that will engage the audience in the way we do every 4 years with the World Cup and then with the Olympics, Dave, all that with the pies, with the Guinness.
We're just going to learn so much. For me, we've got Richard Scudamore, head of the English Premier League, Don Garber from Major League Soccer, and then Christian Seifert from the Bundesliga, all speaking within 24 hours of each other, plus the managing directors, CEOs or owners of English Premier League teams, Italian teams, Major League Soccer franchises. By just comparing and contrasting what these people say, we're going to learn so much about where these leagues are, where these owners are, where their heads are at. I can't wait.
John Green.
Yes, we're going to learn a lot from him.
Charlie is a Red.
Yeah, believe me, we're all going to be working for Charlie as a
I think
Red.
He's Charlie's your boss.
I know, exactly. Has he bought BlazerCon yet?
I don't know, but I know he's on a steamer with his trunk on a ship to these shores. So very quickly, grateful to all of the sponsors, Adidas, Mini, and above all, EA Sports.
Yeah, without a doubt.
This first year has been quite the loss leader for Men Blazers.
Fortune, we've got our $1 million contract, Rog.
What do you mean? We got that. We're looking forward to raising money for Hope for the Warriors.
Yeah, a lot.
And just being with the 1,300 GFOPs for the weekend, that, Dave, is why I have that. Tingling, that numb tingling.
And if you're not coming, if you're unable to make it, we promise that we'll keep you all informed on social media of everything that's going all weekend. Obviously, our podcast next week, obviously, our newsletter, obviously, all of our other media. And we are doing a BlazerCon TV special of the highlights. Tuesday, November 24th, I think that's at 11 p.m. But check local listings.
That's truck pulling permitting.
Yeah, exactly. There could be an overrun on the truck pulling.
Yeah, that when you say highlights, is that a three-minute show? Two-minute show?
No, I think it's a half-hour show, Rog. Yeah, we're making that as well. Okay, Rog, one of the many aspects of BlazerCon for which we absolutely cannot wait, it's your footballing haute couture. What are you going to come in? Some of you have already sent us Ravens previewing your soccer-inspired BlazerCon outfits, and you have set the bar very high. We'd love to see a wide array of clothes and costumes, from Stephen Naismith masks to prosthetic man buns to full-on tweed suits. We will reward the most creatively dressed GFOPs with $100 gift cards to worldsoccershop.com. And thanks to everyone who entered Mini USA's BlazerCon ticket giveaway contest. Mini USA is notifying the winners via email. And final note, for those coming to Brooklyn, the complete BlazerCon schedule with panels and times is now available on meninblazers.com.
Travel safely, and we can't wait to be with you. We have never had one article sent to us so many times by Twitter, Facebook, email, as the Mashable news that they broke about there being a fake man bun that you can now tie onto your own head.
It's important news.
People think we actually just, we invented it, put it out there right ahead of BlazerCon as like stealth guerrilla marketing.
I wish. We're just not that smart. We're not that plugged in, Rog. Okay, we've got a packed show. We're going to break down an end-to-end North London derby that left us wondering, who is happier with the draw? We discuss a Manchester United game in which a goal was actually scored, and Chelsea continue to take on water while Mourinho is sequestered in a Stoke hotel room. Plus, the US men's national team begin World Cup qualifying, MLS playoffs, Rog, and Bob Bradley becomes the most beloved American in Normandy since Eisenhower. To the football. Oh, nice crack. You become so much better at pouring. You've really improved. Well done. Have you practiced?
My day job. Oh, you know, it was Remembrance Sunday this weekend. Hence all the red poppies on football jerseys and managers'
collars. Minutes of silence.
A day for the nation to remember and honour those who've sacrificed themselves to secure and protect our freedom.
Yeah.
I'll just say, as I raise this Guinness, they shall not grow old as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we shall remember them. Cheers, David.
Beautifully, beautifully recited, Roger. Okay, we are now 12/38 of the way through the Premier League season. That reduces, Rog, to 6/19. And the scriptwriters continue to submerge us in a bizarro world where up is down, left is right, and both Arsenal and Spurs are confident, stylish, and resolute.
Oh, David, we're about a third of the way through this Premier League season.
Mm-hmm.
The season in which the Premier League's air of inevitability disappeared.
Yeah.
Top seven as we break for the international pause, separated by 6 points. Leicester City are third. No outcome is certain before kickoff, apart from a Chelsea loss and a Jamie Vardy goal.
Yeah.
It is the best drama on television.
It is.
But, well, maybe Fargo. Can I just say, actually?
Second season Fargo.
The segue. It's the best show I've watched on TV since The Wire. Hansi.
Yeah.
He's the me I wish I was, David.
Really?
Not really. It's kind of cool. Back to the football.
Okay, Rog, the 177th playing of the North London derby. Yes. It finished. Arsenal 1, Tottenham 1. Tottenham draw first blood in the 32nd minute when who else but Sir Harry Kane bounced the ball off the turf and over Petacek's outstretched leg. After a series of chances for both sides, Arsenal broke through in the 77th minute when, of course, their left wing threat, Kieran Gibbs, latched onto a Mesut Ozil ball at Hugo Lloris's back post. Arsenal stay second. Spurs up to fifth. They remain unbeaten in their last 11 league games. And those of you who hold abuse at me for predicting they would finish top four, let's see what's going to happen now.
You can hurl abuse at Davo for many reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
But I've got to say, his predictions.
Backing Spurs this season.
And unbacking Chelsea.
Yeah.
You're a seer. Mm. Oh, the North London derby.
Or I've been spending more money on fixing the Premier League script than I've admitted to previously.
Oh, thank God for our $1 million contract. The North London derby.
Yeah.
That clash of brothers. Normally I like watching Bill Clinton beat Goofy Roger Clinton at Scrabble. But in the league, this season, both teams have shook their traditional countenances.
Yeah.
Spurs, once perpetually soft, now rock hard.
Uh-huh.
And Arsenal, in the league at least, rampant. This was an effervescent, absorbing conflict between two suddenly, out of nowhere, more confident beings, David. With Arsene Wenger feeling confident enough to uncork an amazing, a truly amazing, fashion spread.
Oh.
With L'Équipe Sport and Style.
That was amazing. Rog, if you haven't seen it, go online. We showed a little bit of it on the Men in Blazers show yesterday. I mean, an excellent stylist. I mean, he wears clothes well, Rog. You know why? Because he's skinny.
It was shot at the Hotel Belle Reve, once the home of American novelist F. Scott Fitzgerald. And Arsene looks so good. It looks like his head, honestly, was welded onto Eddie Redmayne's body by the photo editor. And the accompanying interview, translated brilliantly by the Arsenal blog that we love so much, Arseblog. It has such a lofty quote as Wenger saying,
"Religiously, it is said that God created man. I am only a guide. I enable others to express what they have within them. I didn't create anything. I am a facilitator of what is beautiful." Sorry, it was German then. "I am a facilitator of what is beautiful in man. I define myself as an optimist. My never-ending struggle in this business is to release what is beautiful." Oh, man.
God, it makes me weep almost.
He's not a football manager, David. His job is just to release what is beautiful in man.
Yeah.
He's a warrior poet.
Up there with the greats.
When I read this, I wanted to make sweet, sweet love to Arsene Wenger, I've got to tell you. Granted, yeah. Is Arsenal were attempting to ignore the red welts left by the bare-bottom 5-1 spanking 5-1. Dispensed by Bayern Munich midweek in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. But this was the league where they've been so gorgeous. But it was Spurs that began without fear. Yeah. I mean, Arsenal thrive when their opponents give them time on the ball and space in which to operate. And Spurs, their just collective zeal to press, denied them both. Dembélé charging around, savouring the callous smothering of his opponents. Young Dele Alli.
Dele Alli, what a performance in midfield, Rog. Really impressive.
And Eric Dier too, forcing poor Santi Cazorla off at half-time, complaining in Lady Edith S style of dizzy spells. You just got to admire the organisation Pochettino has instilled in this Spurs team. This is the same Spurs squad that Tim Sherwood lamented for its, quote, lack of guts and character. And it was fascinating to watch the first half, Dave. A counter-attacking team playing against counter-attacking teams. Both sides sought to see just how many players they could devote to attack without leaving their rear guard exposed. It's all about the transition game.
And what I loved about Tottenham's performance, particularly in that first half, that steal in the middle of the field, Dele Alli, Dembélé, and the direwolf, Rog, put at the back, Kyle Walker looks like a player reborn this season under Pochettino. Danny Rose, a player reborn under Pochettino. And the way that they attack, they got so much width out of their fullbacks. Really superb.
Well, Arsenal struggled to create because of the injured Bellerin, Theo Walcott and the Ox. And without them, they just didn't have the speed to trouble Spurs' backline. They could press high up and afraid of being caught out over the top. I mean, you talk about Kyle Walker. It was like watching a guy say, not by the hairs on my chinny chin chin, over and over again as he uncorked a slew of terrific cover tackles. Mm-hmm. For the first 77 minutes, his confidence just flowed over. And it was Arsenal that blinked first, David.
Yeah, absolutely. A ball from Danny Rose in the 32nd minute sets up Harry Kane. He got kind of lost by the Arsenal defence.
I think they've just been watching game video of him in that 748-minute goal drought. They're like, we don't have to cover him, or whatever they say to him, whatever language they speak.
Yeah.
I mean, it was funny that, because you think Arsenal, historically, you think offside trap.
They set it up very well, usually.
Koscielny and Mertesacker, I mean, Per pushed up to push his spindly frame against little Eriksen in midfield.
Yeah.
Koscielny charged forward to work a broken offside trap.
Yeah.
And then charged Harry.
Yeah.
In on check to net his third goal in two games against the arch enemy. And he's a player too that was once in Arsenal's academy.
Left at the age of eight.
As an eight-year-old.
Perfect ball from Danny Rose. It's that slight diagonal ball to an opposite diagonal run. You have to hit it so precisely to go and get that right. Harry Kane, perhaps a little fortunate. Check went down a little early. He bounced it in front of him. It bounced perfectly over him to go into the goal. But you know what? He's a man in form. He's scoring goals again, Rog.
Talking about men in form, scoring goals again. Giroud, 6 goals in Arsenal's last 7 games.
Yeah.
But after having his undercarriage cut by Dr. Yann Vertonghen.
Yeah, exactly.
And some classic French on Walloon violence.
Oh, my word.
He just became like a siege gun that Arsenal sought to wheel into position to blast at the enemy's portcullis. And he headed it off target twice.
Yeah.
I mean, on this day, he was just too meaty, too French, too foreheady and incredibly frustrated.
Yeah. And the chesting down of Vertonghen, Rog, that was a highlight. I've never seen a man taken down by the power of another man's chest.
Well, it wasn't just chest. It was nipple first.
Yeah,
I looked up what a nipple is in French. It's le mamelon.
Le mamelon.
He used it for the show last night.
Yeah.
He used his mamelon.
Yeah.
And on their home turf, it wasn't just Giroud frustrated. The Arsenal fans were silent. Their team couldn't get hold of the ball. All the singing you could hear around the Emirates was from Tottenham fans' throats. And Arsenal suddenly seemed battle-weary from Munich, heavy-legged, hungover. And the team whose injuries and lack of depth were suddenly cruelly exposed. The well was so dry, Wenger could only throw on 3 defensive
players. Yeah, he's looking for a goal. And the only people he can throw on are
Flamini,
Gibbs.
And Arteta. I mean, Kieran Gibbs came on as this willing runner on the left flank, 74th minute, and within 3 minutes.
Yeah, fantastic goal he gets on the end. So advanced up the pitch. We don't often see Arsenal strikers that far up the pitch. Onto a Mesut Ozil cross, knocks it in with the left foot. Good footballer, Kieran Gibbs.
Yeah,
Roger.
And Ozil finally punched in for work. It was his contractually obliged assist, his 10th in 11 games, which I think is a Premier League record. There's an old footballing cliche. Goals change games.
Yeah.
This one was like a kidney punch.
Yeah.
in a boxing match. I mean, it transformed everything. The energy levels for the two teams just flipped. Spurs suddenly seemed to pay the price for their pressing. They were now the heavy leg, kind of bereft of confidence on the ball, and the atmosphere in the stadium. Giroud whipped them up. It was all deliriously Arsenal.
Yeah.
Wenger's team seemed to be the one with the will to win. Absorbing battle, ended 1-1. Did both teams blow opportunities here, Dave? Arsenal to go top and Spurs to have a signature win and beat their nemesis in style?
No, both teams had opportunities to win the game, without a doubt. Tottenham had, you know, Eric Dier, I think, had a fantastic opportunity with a header in the first half. So both teams had opportunities to win the game. I think at the end, on reflection, both teams will be happy with the point. My initial reaction is that it's a better point for Tottenham, it being at Arsenal, it extending their unbeaten run through, 11 games unbeaten for Tottenham, which
since
is just
first
remarkable.
Against United.
Rog. For Arsenal, the only reason why the point doesn't feel quite as good is that they had an opportunity to go top of the table over Man City. But still, I think a good point for both teams.
You know, Arsenal were so poor for so much of the game. To leave with a point and stem the bleeding post-Bayern with so many injuries, 10 by Wenger's calculations, to dig deep, summon a way to find a goal when they needed one, it'll be a huge relief. Ultimately, Davo, being bounded from the Champions League, it may be a gift for their Premier League challenge. But for Spurs, they didn't get the second goal, but it was still an incredibly impressive performance all round. I mean, they'll be frustrated not to have closed the game down. But before the kickoff, they would have taken a point. We now know their challenge for top four is very, very real. This is just the first third of the season. It's kind of like the ascent of a roller coaster before it just plummets over the top and everything hurtled with twists and turns over the holiday period, which is just so packed and brutal on every team's pretending. Mauricio Pochettino's brand of football is exhausting for the players. We've seen his teams tail off in the final third of every season. Can this be a Spurs team that reverses that trend? That remains to be seen. But I will say, Eric Dier's family sent us a stat that if he plays for England, he's just been called up after surviving a podcast interview with me. If he plays against Spain or France in the next game, of the last 14 England debutants, 9 will have been brought through by Pochettino, which is an amazing statistic. And this Spurs
both
team,
at Southampton and at Tottenham,
this Spurs team are doing the impossible, David.
Yeah.
They're making me believe that England...
Okay, wait a minute. You said this to me. You said this to me earlier this week. I still can't quite believe you feel it. Anyway, say it again.
They're making me believe, David. Butland.
Yeah.
Stones.
Yeah.
Dier.
Yeah.
Ali.
Yeah.
Kane.
Yeah.
We may make the World Cup quarterfinals again in my lifetime.
Yeah. And lose to somebody much better than us. I do think that it's a very good era for young England players and very good players coming through, being very well coached and actually playing for their Premier League sides. Not to mention Jamie Vardy, Rog, the name that we're missing. We suddenly have striker contention between Vardy and Kane for England. Definitely good times for England, and yet they haven't done anything in a major tournament in so long. Definitely true about Pochettino. I love the way Tottenham are playing. The reason I believe in them this season is I think they've got a goal scorer, they've got a centre of midfield, and they're really strong at the back. I just love this team at the back. I just love the way they play. We said that Arsenal had a chance to go top. The reason that they had a chance to go top is what happened to Aston Villa, Rog. Villa 0, Man City 0. The game between the table's first and last place teams was about as aesthetically pleasing as City's neon uniform. City nearly broke the deadlock in the 53rd minute when Raheem Sterling's wide-open header caromed off Brad Guzan's bald head and out of bounds. The point is enough to keep City top, but not enough to scrape new manager Remy Gard's Villa side off the bottom.
The Remy Gard era has begun.
Yeah.
Il commence.
One.
First impressions, Davey?
Yeah.
What a fine-looking man.
He is a fine-looking man.
Many of you think he looks like Tim from Wings.
Yeah, Tim Daly of Wings.
Producer Lexi thinks he looks like Carl Martino's older brother.
I think he looks a bit like Peter Riegert from Local Hero. A young Peter Riegert.
At D Servon.
Yeah.
Tweeted us to say he's a dead ringer for present-day Dave Gard from Depeche Mode.
That's funny.
I hope Remy Gard doesn't live that life.
Yeah.
At Rev Jeff Evans.
Mm-hmm.
I love this one. He's like a French John Cusack. But what a job he's got on his hands, Dave, with this Villa team. Like someone with Montezuma's revenge, the squad has problems at both ends. And Gard's first step, interesting this, was to tell the press that he's banned the French contingent at Villa from speaking anything but English when they're in training. Thus, a collective circle of wagons culture is born, Davo. And the big question for this game, the top v bottom clash, was, Would Villa know what to do without having a raving lunatic on the sideline?
It's going to be an adjustment from Tim Sherwood, without a doubt. He had no idea they were talking French. It's just some funny foreign language that was going on.
He thought he spoke it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, mate. But, you know, No, good point, good point. Villa did flicker up and down the wings with a sprightly optimism without managing to record a shot on goal for the entire 90 minutes. But City, odd performance.
Yeah.
Flat performance.
Yeah.
Dominated, but with a complete lack of urgency. As if they believed the result had an air of inevitability and 3 points were theirs by right. I mean, you get no points just for showing up, as Wilfred Bony has showed over and over again these weeks. He wobbled off injured. They didn't look any better or worse without him. Arguably, they should have had style points deducted, David.
Well, the neon yellow jerseys were hard to watch, Rog. But also the game itself was difficult to watch. I don't like watching football like this. And neon Man City... Believe me, and take this from someone who knows, I support a team who often play a form of football, and not just this season when they're losing, when they play any season, they play a form of football that's tough to love. The reason why Man City, even with these wonderfully creative players, I think are tough to really get into for the neutral, is so often they play this dispassionate football. Not so often, but every now and then, and you tune in, you watch them, and you think they're going to express themselves, and they play this form of dispassionate football.
I think those jerseys were just a cruel joke at Prince Ginger Kevin De Bruyne's expense.
Oh, yeah, he can't wear things like that.
Gingers should not be forced into a luminous neon colours.
No neon.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it, City. We stand with gingers.
Yeah.
The game ultimately turned on 60 seconds of goalmouth action for Villa. Hashtag pray for Guzan was at the centre of both moments. First, he palmed the Kolarov free kick awkwardly backwards into the danger zone. The Villa defence hat the ball away with relief. I think if you're watching slow motion, you can just see his sphincter just tighten.
The whole thing was match fixy.
Diamond forging levels. And then Raheem Sterling, somehow the tiniest guy in the field, swanned in, unmarked.
And jumped up and made a header. Hit a pretty good header. Hit it very solidly, but so solidly it went straight forward into Brad Guzan's head, Rog, and came off so hard. Only a bald head could have rebounded that ball so quickly. It's a law of physics.
Let's give Brad some credit.
Yeah.
I think he was mocking derisively. Yeah. You call that a header?
Yeah.
This.
Bring me a header. This
is a header. He says the giant Illinoisan from point blank range. Mm-hmm. Villa have a t-shirt at the club shop that says 2/3 of the earth is covered by water. Mm-hmm. The other third is covered by Brad Guzan. To which at Villa USA photoshopped a correction. 2/3 of the earth is covered by water. The other third is covered by Brad Guzan's face. That was the game, bar the welcome Villa's bitter fans gave to turncoat Fabian Delph upon his substitution into the game, waving inflatable snakes as he took the field. Grown-up men, David. Inflatable snakes. We'll talk more about that one in a minute. A point for Villa that was fortuitous as it was unforeseen. City now winless in the last three Premier League away games, David. A second dose of insipid Manchester football we were treated to this weekend, though.
Yeah, United, though, scored twice against West Brom. 2-0 it finishes. After scoreless draws in the last two league games, a Jesse Lingard goal, Rog, and a Juan Mata penalty flipped the United narrative. They've gone from offensively impotent to defensively impenetrable. LVG's men have not conceded in 550 minutes, and they remain fourth.
Yep, I mean, the defensive stat, that's the good news for United fans. But in attack, they've almost become an avant-garde art project to craft entertainment-free football. I mean, Tony Pulis did what Tony Pulis does. His side sat back, they stifled all play. Johnny Evans relished the opportunity to bruise away against his old club. But to watch a United team without the wit, the craft, the speed, the ability to break through, just sterile possession. Staggering.
I'm really interested to see Man United as this season wears on in their performances against the big teams, some of the better teams. It's just going to be interesting to see how Van Gaal adjusts. I think he's finding some players in form. I think the discovery of Lingard, just seen him play brilliantly for Man United in pre-season, seen him play brilliantly for England at different sort of age levels. And he's just the kind of between the lines player. He can sort of move seamlessly between midfield and attack that you really need to make that offense tick.
He's a bit insolent for LVG because he defies Van Gaal's orders to play monotonous football only. And it's such a subtle finish.
Yeah.
First ever United league goal. Lovely moment for a local lad from nearby Warrington who said, "It was pure happiness. My mum was here, my brother, my dad, my girlfriend. Since I was seven, I've been at United. what joy he must have felt. I wonder what Memphis Depay thought while watching from the stands. Mm-hmm. Wayne Rooney again looked laboured. His best shot of the weekend came in the WWE.
Yeah.
When he smacked GFOP wrestler Wade Barrett across the chops.
That's a mistake.
After being trash talked, well done, Wade, in front of his family. Trash talked Wayne Rooney for fun. It's all pretend at the Manchester Arena. I loved how the Raw commentator identified him as Wayne Rooney of the Manchester United. And though the whole stunt was kind of theatrical and planned and everything was scripted, Barrett's sneering rant aimed at Rooney's six-year-old son, Kai. It felt all too real. He got to walk up to him. He's a Preston supporter. We've had him on the pod before. You should listen to his interview. He's a great guy. And he delivered probably the fairest critique of the United player to his face this season. He snarled, "I'd hate for your little boy to sit there and watch his own father fail. Because let's face it, he gets to experience that every single time you step on a football pitch." Oh, Berahino missed a point-blank header, which could have tied the game. Yeah, but late on, Martial won a penalty to lock up the points. I loved his little face when he got that penalty.
Yeah.
Trying to suppress the sheer joy a 19-year-old would naturally feel when he's come to United to Old Trafford and so quickly become the key game-changer on whom the fans can pin their hopes and dreams. Job done. Another clean sheet. But again, no polish, no confidence. Where's that swagger? Where's that dominance, Davey?
I tell you, as a Chelsea fan, they're in fourth. They're in great position. I still think we haven't seen Manchester United truly come into their own this season. I still think they are a real threat for the title, Rog. Talking of threats for the title,
this is the best story of the season.
Leicester City 2, Watford 1. The Cinderella story with a Mark Morrison soundtrack, The Return of the Mac, rolls on. The Foxes claw their way to within a point of the City and Arsenal behind an N'Golo Kante goal and a penalty from former Stocksbridge Park Steel's Jamie Vardy. Vardy extends his miraculous scoring streak, Rog, to 9 games and brings his league-leading goal tally to 12.
In Hollywood, Davo, somewhere, a GFOP studio head is trying to persuade the studio to make the Hammers Vardy movie, Davo.
It's a big movie.
Maybe Megan Rapinoe can play Jamie Vardy. It'd be fantastic. Leicester had 40% of possession.
Yeah.
But boy, when they get possession, they use it. They run. I don't think any Premier League side is more efficient at doing what they do than Claudio Ranieri's Leicester.
Yeah.
And this one they owe a debt of thanks to Watford goalkeeper Aurelio Gomez. Used to be a flapping, mistake-prone master of self-destruction.
And now?
Well, he got Watford to the Premier League.
Yeah.
But this was what one could call a throwback
TBT.
Yeah. Oh my God, Bill Buckner schooled the goalkeeping. Mm-hmm. And then flattening Vardy on one of his signature one-on-one breaks, David.
Yeah. Leicester played that kind of football, Rog. Like they just love playing football. They're like baby Arsenal, Roger, like toddler Arsenal. They just run around and love every single second of it.
It was an amazing moment. Mahrez is the designated penalty taker, mm-hmm. and he picked up the ball to go about his business. The Leicester crowd howled.
Yeah.
Vardy stepped in to replace him at the spot, which is no easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And he just spanked the ball home.
The least English penalty I've ever seen, Rog.
And now 9 straight games, the second Premier League player to score 9 consecutive times. Ruud van Nistelrooy did 10. I mean, this is the greatest burst of world-class form by a non-doped-up Russian athlete I've ever seen.
Oh, my God, that report. He should have spoken about that.
He's English Rudy. I think his ascent is as unforeseen and unpredicted as Norm Macdonald's rise to become Colonel Sanders.
Yeah.
On the commercial, which I don't quite understand.
Yeah.
Claudio Ranieri said about his team, "We tie together an English spirit with Italian technique. The squad is a group of friends."
Oh.
Channeling the management wisdom of one Mr. Charlie Isaret.
I know, very important. He might now be owning Leicester City. Rog, this was a good football game. Liverpool 1, Palace 2. The first league loss of the Jurgen Klopp era in Liverpool. Scott Dan's 82nd minute header. He's a childhood Liverpool fan, right, Rog? Sees Alan Pardew's men leave Anfield with all 3 points. Liverpool slipped to 10th in the table. And like a spurned lover, we imagine Brodge furiously checking his phone to see if Liverpool have changed their mind.
Worse than losing. He was told to talk to the hand by Holt.
Oh, that was an amazing shot. I wish video existed of that. We only got it as a still on the show.
Alan Pardew, I want to get him on the pod because he's had a fight with Pochettino. We're beginning to see a pattern with exactly what gets underneath Alan Pardew's skin.
Yeah, Pellegrini.
Now Klopp.
Yeah, foreigners. Jolly foreigner. Jolly foreigner. Doesn't like foreigners. Gets on. Well, he likes Mourinho. Gets on quite well with him.
You must be sick of us, saying the Crystal Palace fans. As they won this one in front of Stevie G. Poor Stevie G. His last two matches at Anfield, Liverpool 1, Crystal Palace 3. And now Liverpool 1, Crystal Palace 2. That's after Crystal Palace also destroyed.
Ended their Premier League title hopes a couple of seasons ago.
This was all about Liverpool's ongoing defensive woe. I mean, Bolasie playing as striker in this one scored Palace's first goal from open play since August after Emre Can did his special signature move. A defensive clearance that doesn't make it out the penalty area.
And also, I think you saw here that versus Chelsea last week, they could go away. They played that very effective gegenpressing, up-tempo, hard-tackling style against Chelsea. It's harder to do it at home when your fans and everyone expects you to possess the ball.
It's also harder to do it when you're knackered from a 5,000-mile Europa League-induced round trip to Kazan.
Yeah, that's true.
That's heavy legs. Somehow they willed themselves back in, though, Davo, through Coutinho. But as they pressed for a winner and Klopp threw on Firmino, the game became kind of frantic, crazy, open. And Scott Dann, season ticket holder as a kid at Liverpool, hit them with a late sucker punch.
Yeah, from the Kabai corner.
Again, Liverpool's defenders won't feel good when they watch the game tape. Sloppy defending, which is going to become probably a semi-permanent problem after Mamadou Sakho collided with Bolasie and now could be out for 2 months. Poor Jurgen Klopp recoiling with culture shock as he watched the Liverpool fans exit the Kop after the goal in the 82nd minute. He said this.
I saw many people leaving the stadium. I felt pretty alone in this moment.
Oh my God, that makes me feel awful.
I felt pretty alone.
Oh my word.
Oh, gorgeous man.
Yeah.
He is the greatest cuddler in sport.
Yeah.
He's like the world's most enormous German care bear. I'm glad for him, though. The international break, which I hate, but I'm glad for him. He's got a chance to catch his breath. Seven games in 22 days. All of those injuries, chance to kind of pick things up. Guyan Randall wrote a raven describing Klopp's feelings right now. The German word Leidenschaft.
Yeah.
Which is knowing the pursuit will be unpleasant, but tolerating it because the outcome is worth the cost.
Wow.
So this, the furore about Stevie G, the rumour he was coming back, David. Yeah. I saw that as just a fascinating symbol flickering up this week and then being quashed by Liverpool.
Do you think that was just an English newspaper narrative, or do you think that's Gerrard's camp sort of pushing for it, or do you think it's just a pile of rubbish?
I mean, more than anything, I'm just fascinated by the reaction, just at how much this team is running on hopes and dreams. I mean, Klopp is a god. But resuscitating Stevie G as a Premier League player, it's like a miracle outstripping the healing of a leper.
Yeah.
But just the excitement that that rumour, just a firestorm, it's testament to just how heavy the hopes and dreams that ride on Klopp's shoulders are that he's stirred with his presence.
Yeah, what he needs more than anything else is a fit Daniel Sturridge, is what I feel.
You need to cuddle from Nathan Clyne and he needs one now. Daddy wants...
Okay, Rog, time to get through this next bit. Stoke 1, Chelsea 0. Not really a surprise. The defending champs fall for just the seventh time this season. Once again, we've only played 12 games. As their suspended manager wanders the streets of Stoke, watching in his iPad, according to him. An acrobatic 53rd minute strike from Austrian Marko Arnautovic moves the Potters into 12th. Chelsea slipped to 16th, just 3 points clear of the relegation zone.
195 days on from winning the title.
Yeah.
The relegation battle is real.
Yeah.
It's this loss was business as usual for Chelsea this season, but it was all the more numbing because it felt like the crisis for Mourinho may have peaked after the Dynamo Kiev win midweek. Fantastic scenes. Mourinho emotionally moved by the reaction the Chelsea fans gave him. Standing up for the special one, they chanted throughout the game. And it was not to be, David.
Yeah, see, I think it's all the more numbing. Because in this game, Chelsea, and particularly some of the players who haven't played very well, came to life and actually played well. But like a tennis player who can, like, hit every shot technically, who has all aspects of the game together, but just who can't hit that final winner or force their opponent to miss. Chelsea seem unable, however they play, to figure a way to win a football game.
This game was what one would expect a Stoke and Chelsea game to be, a physical battle with moments and flair from which Stoke would not back down. Yeah. I mean, Shaqiri played like a man determined to show a bigger club that he's still a spark plug of a player.
Totally.
But there were moments, many moments, 62% possession, 19 shots, when Chelsea's fine football pass flickered into the present. Hazard seemed very game.
Oh, it was very good.
I think the effort switch was flicked to on.
Yeah.
For at least 70 minutes in this game.
Yeah.
I did wonder whether Jose FaceTimed the team at halftime just to let them know he still had nothing to say.
In his iPad.
Because then the second half,
it's
just standard Chelsea 2015-16.
Yeah.
Diego Costa moment of ridiculous. Tick.
Yeah.
Smelling his underarms and telling the world that Shawcross stinks.
Yeah.
A growing man.
Mm-hmm.
Shawcross's wife Lita tweeted out a photo of her husband grinning with a tube of Dove deodorant.
That's so funny.
Dove shares have probably plummeted. A Stoke goal. Tick. Arnautovic. And this was frustrating.
Pedro hits the post and then Loic Remy. Yeah, just an absolutely standard Chelsea moment of honour.
I said on the show that seeing Chelsea stumble to 16th, not a surprise at this point, but seeing a Chelsea player elect not to fall down. I mean, we always laugh when footballers dive. This gentleman is now being questioned for not diving. Seeing a Chelsea player act in the Chelsea shirt with honour, integrity, and the force of goodness, that was just unbelievable. I couldn't quite comprehend it, David.
Well, let's ignore the fact that this was Chelsea, and obviously, you know, many people are quite happy to see Chelsea not awarded that penalty. Let's just accept that the reasons that players dive, and we've talked about this before, is because refs never call it when they don't go down. And it's kind of ridiculous. Having said that, Chelsea, in seasons previous, find a way to get a point or to win that game at Stoke. And it's something about their collective mentality, about their collective confidence, that they seem unable to buy a win.
Yeah, fascinating. I mean, the rumours continue to circulate about Roberto Di Matteo goose-hitting ex-bosses.
Mm.
The one I'd love, ex-Liverpool manager Brendan Rodgers being banded around. But can Mourinho be fired?
By Brendan Rodgers.
I did wonder whether Mourinho can be fired after a game he did not manage. That would be like the A-team being wanted for a crime they didn't commit. That's B. Bry tweeted in saying, it would be like the movie Friday.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get fired on your day off? I do have some feelings, though, David. First of all, Mourinho wasn't there, but he was there courtesy of the Mourinho masks and the Mourinho life-size cardboard cutout that a fan wielded.
They weren't realistic, though, those cardboard cutouts. They were from last season when he was slimmer, he looked younger, he was more fashion-forward.
But I watched them, and I see an adult man has had a good laugh in the pub about maybe we should make a big life-size cutout of Jose and take it to the game.
Uh-huh.
And then he took it to the next level, got the cutout.
Yeah.
And then he put that cutout.
By the way, getting the cutout involves a lot of work at your local Kinko's.
And then he put it under his arm.
Yeah.
He carried it to his car or the train, drove or travelled all the way to Stoke with a large cardboard cutout in the automobile. And then got it out and walked it all the way up to the Britannia.
Could I just make one point, though? And you don't have to go too deep in our Instagram to realise that we are also grown men who have transported large cardboard cutouts of Tim Sherwood's head into City in this fine country.
Yeah, but that's Tim Sherwood. He's a good manager. But talking about Mourinho, the other thing I want to say, I've realised he's like a Jim Harbour.
Uh-huh.
A guy who's chafing managerial style, just wears his players down in 3 years.
Yeah, interesting.
And Jim Harbour has found the college game, with its players cycling in and out every 4 years, just a perfect environment for him to be. The players always come, they always go. So if I was Mourinho's agent,
Jorge UCLA. Mendes. UCLA.
Sod that. Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Find a refuge in the ACC. Mourinho, the Blacksburg years, they're coming.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love that. At Joe724-26005, 11 games in, who would have thought Leicester would be 14 points ahead of Chelsea.
Amazing stuff. West Ham 1, your Everton 1, goals from the eyes
of Everton, Manuel
Lanzini and Everton's Romelu Lukaku at Upton Park. West Ham slipped to 6th, Everton to 9th. Rog, your thoughts?
Fantastic game of football. Mm-hmm. Two ambitious sides littered with a mix of young, courageous talent, midfield steel, two hulking strikers, two great goals. Lanzini!
Yeah.
A flick that was artful as it was mocking.
Oh, it's a fantastic goal, Rog. Not unlike Lingard's goal, hit on the half volley. He had that wonderful move away to the left before it goes in. I don't think he was celebrating too early. I think he was trying to draw it with the power of his body, like a sort of a magician, Rog, into the top right-hand corner.
Lukaku, 7-7 against West Ham, after a delicious through ball from the over-manicured eyebrows of Gerry Deulofeu.
Yeah, he has over... He and a few other Premier League players are doing a little bit too much eyebrow work, Rog.
He and Zerati in this game look like... When Spandau Ballet first broke through, they looked like they could be backing singers for them.
They both love puffy shirts.
Oh, it was the kind of goal that confuses me as to whom I'm going to name my next child after. Is it going to be Romelu or Gerry Deke? But you want to ask me about the dark moment. The dark moment for all football
West
fans
Ham
and lovers
fans,
of the Premier
West
League.
Ham GFOPs have emailed me, or one in particular, and asked me to make you go on the record and address the tackle that took out Payet, Rog.
It's a dark moment. Mm-hmm. I'll say Dimitri Payet. He fills an entire back line with fear. I mean, he's now ruled out for 3 months with an ankle injury. Mm-hmm. Brutal loss for West Ham. Brutal loss for all Premier League fans. It was a crushing tackle from James McCarthy. Many, many West Ham fans absolutely incandescent. And I'd say Payet has been one of the stories of the season. I feel terrible for him psychologically to be at the top of your game in the Premier League in your first season just to be knocked out like that. But I watch James McCarthy week in, week out. He's a firm player, but he's a fair player. And I predict that he will feel terrible about what he's done and for Payet.
Good, Rog. Well addressed.
I just want to say, on a happier note, I want to thank all GFOPs for their donations to Mick Cullen, the Everton Speedo wearer, who we've seen on our television screens at the game in his tight Speedos. He's been raising money for cancer. We featured him recently in our email newsletter, The Raven. And he wrote a note because he said he was inundated by GFOPs sending him philanthropic support in the wake of his appearance. And this is a note from Mick.
I would like to say a big, massive thank you to all your listeners, all the Everton fans in your beautiful country, and all the Americans who have sent donations thousands of miles away to Liverpool, England. It doesn't seem to matter that we are out of sight. We're all connected with compassion and the belief that humanity is the core of our souls. Thank you all so much for donating. I will be at the game tomorrow at Goodison, and it's on the telly, so hopefully we will meet again and the sun will shine. Ha ha, all my love. A nutty British Everton fan who is very grateful for your generosity. All my love, Speedo Mick. XXX, courage.
I love football, David.
Oh, I love that, Rog. Earlier on, I thought those were the words of Arsene Wenger in L'Equipe. Okay, Rog, Sunderland 0, Southampton 1, a 69th minute Dusan Tadic penalty gives the Saints a win on Wearside. Southampton currently in 7th, only 4 points off the top 4. Sunderland, meanwhile, stuck on 6 points, just one above lowly Aston Villa.
Best result of the weekend for Bournemouth.
Yep.
I spoke to Southampton chair Ralph Kruger, mm-hmm. who's coming over to Blazercomm.
Yeah, can't wait.
And he says he cannot believe how great this season is set up for them. He says he prefers the slow build of this season to the sudden surge of last. He said last year things almost came too easily for us. But this season we had the disappointment of being knocked out of Europe early, and that frustration has forced all the new guys to settle in and begin to build a season. Mm-hmm. And he believes that Southampton are primed to have a second half of the season this year rather than burn out as they did last. So I mean, that's one of the sessions at BlazerCon mm-hmm. I'm most interested to listen to, and Kyle Martino will be doing the interview in honour.
Brilliant. Can't wait, Rog. The aforementioned Bournemouth 0, Newcastle 1. Steve McLaren's side pull a smash-and-grab job on the south coast after being outshot 20-2. An outstanding 5-save performance from Newcastle's third goalkeeper, Rob Elliott, sees Newcastle trade places with the Cherries in the relegation zone.
Yeah, I mean, Bournemouth, 20 shots, 16 corners. Rob Elliott, the game. You said he's the backup to the backup.
He's the backup to the backup.
Newcastle remain the most erratic team in football. They smash Norwich 1 week, get hammered by Sunderland, and then have this. I mean, they just did not deserve this win whatsoever. At the Stephen Wood said, watching Bournemouth lose at home was a heartbreaking way to start my weekend. It's like waking up to watch the end of old Yeller. I hope not. I hope not. Big news this week for Bournemouth fans. Peak Six, a private equity firm, I believe out of Chicago, led by Matt Holsizer, who is the co-owner of the NHL Minnesota Wild, has purchased 25% of the club
Wow.
for an undisclosed investment. to support the earlier money put in by mini oligarch Maxim Demin. How much of that money will be aimed at the transfer window? We'll be able to ask Jeff Mostyn when he's here this weekend, David. But there is fight in Bournemouth yet.
Interesting stuff, Rog. Norwich 1, Swansea 0, a close-range Johnny Howson header is enough to put a tourniquet on the Canaries' four-game
losing streak. Put a tourniquet on it.
After a bright start to the season, Swansea have lost 5 of their last 8 games, slipping to 14th. What is happening there, Rog?
All that was good. Shelfie Gomis Montero has gone flat, and Gary Monk, massive pressure surrounding him after losing 5 of the last 8. The club want him to bring on backroom staff with a bit of experience. This is the man who led Swansea just last season to their best ever start. It's a bit of a mini Chelsea campaign, David.
Yeah.
All I say is club cultures are sensitive microsystems in which your recent record is just one factor, one that's dwarfed by the current status of your key relationships. And there's rumours suggesting that Swansea's next game against Bournemouth is a must-win. I fear, Dave, we're seeing the death rattle of a manager's tenure.
Talking of the death rattle of a manager's tenure,
how
Rog,
dare you.
This Friday, the US men's national team begins the road to Russia. Jurgen Klinsmann and the Von Trapps open their 2018 World Cup qualifying campaign against St. Vincent and the Grenadines. I keep on thinking it's St. Kitts and Nevis. I'm terribly,
many of you
terrible getting these islands
mixed tweeted
up.
In St. Vincent and the Grenadines are one of the great soul bands of the 1970s.
Huh, they play them at 7 p.m. on ESPN2, a game we will actually temporarily suspend BlazerCon activities to watch that game with hundreds of GFOPs.
We always suspend activities when St. Vincent and the Grenadines play.
Yeah, we love them.
We never miss it. Do you know why?
Why?
Because their national bird is the St. Vincent parrot, the Amazon Aguilla Dinghy. It's one of my favourite kinds of parrots.
We love parrots.
Also, the population is 110,000, which makes it as big as Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Wow.
The US team, 14 of the players were on the in the squad that fell to Mexico in that, oh my God, was it just last month?
Oh,
that dark, dark night.
Forget about it.
No Clint Dempsey, the 6 all-time goal scorer, 120 career caps, a career momentarily paused. He's scored 9 goals in 10 appearances, but Jurgen says, I wanted to give young strikers, including Stanford Messi, Jordan Morris, a chance. Portland Timbers, Liberian-born attacker. Darlington Nagby must have been working like a crazy man on his German because he's got a call up.
Good Darlington, good God Darlington.
As has New York Red Bulls rock Matt Miazga. First US men's national team call up for him. Godspeed.
Congratulations, Rog. Talking of those great MLS stars, some thrilling finishes this past Sunday's MLS Conference semifinals. In the Western Conference, 3 goals in the final 10 minutes sent FC Dallas
bonkers
and Seattle into extra time in Frisco. With no one able to break the deadlock, the game went to penalties, where number one seed Dallas prevailed. They'll face the Timbers, who beat Vancouver 2-0. And in the Eastern Conference, Kai Kamara's 111th minute extra time
amazing
winner sees the Crew past the Montreal Impact in Columbus. They'll face Supporters Shield winners New York Red Bulls, who beat DC United in both legs.
The best playoff in my recent memory for MLS. Drama, moments of superlative play and human poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I love the New York Red Bulls fans singing to Bradley and Sean Wright Phillips with the Yaya Kolo tune. They made Sean fit by singing Sean, Sean. I just love America and your creative invention. Kai Kamara, my favourite moment, scoring the winning goal for Columbus Crew, then charging towards his fans and just breaking down with the emotion of it all. It was a beautifully human moment. And then that Seattle-Dallas late flurry of last-minute goals. It was like an NBA playoff game, honestly. And it led to Alexi Lalas momentarily, just momentarily, losing his mind. He screams, "This is one nutty league! My goodness!" Which I can't believe has not just become an epic moment in MLS history. Partly because as good as they were, these playoff games were right up against the whole NFL schedule, which is completely savage.
Okay, the two-leg conference finals begin after the international break. Columbus hosts the Red Bulls 5 p.m. Eastern Time Sunday, November 22nd on ESPN. Portland hosts FC Dallas at 7:30 p.m. Eastern that same night on Fox Sports 1. A busy week on global football's coaching carousel, Rog. A French icon takes over at NYCFC, and an American ball takes over at Le Havre, and a former Manchester United manager that is not named Alex Ferguson is fired in Spain.
Oh, Bob Bradley to Le Havre. How'd you say that?
Le Havre.
Le Havre.
Le Havre. You can get a boat to Le Havre.
French,
I don't know.
Where do I've been there.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. French League 2.
Southampton to Le Havre, I think. You've got a ferry.
Been on that ferry.
Yeah.
Hope to go on it again. See Bob there. French League 2.
Yeah.
He's officially becoming the most interesting man in world football on his journeys. We wish him well at Sheldon A9787. Americans do have a good track record in Normandy. Mm-hmm. I checked in with Bob last week.
Yeah.
And he said, I mean, he's an amazing man. He said, it's clear that I'm still seen as a project. Mm-hmm. Fighting for European respect is not easy. Few give him the respect he deserves. And the thing, I mean, he's still seen as a project as a manager. Huh. And I just want to say how much I admire what Bob Bradley's doing and how he's doing it with class, with dignity, stoically, with success at every place he stops at. I can't imagine how hard it must be doing what he's doing, knowing that football management is about who you know rather than what you do, and that there's a stigma surrounding the American accent in the coaching box, almost a phobia, David. And Bob Bradley is determined to crack that stigma with an incredible dignity. I can't imagine what he feels knowing that he could be making a difference at a higher level. But I do believe in decades to come, because of his sacrifice, American coaches will succeed, and they'll succeed on his shoulders. He's pathfinding, he's trailblazing. And I know that every American fan of the sport will be watching him and cheering for him with respect and awe.
Talking of American coaches, Jason Kreis out. And talking of France, Vieira, Rog, Arsenal legend, part of the Man City setup, is coming in to take over.
At your
NYCFC.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating watching this. Vieira, many will remember him playing. Many will never have seen him play. He was a groundbreaking midfielder who transformed that position with Arsenal in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very interesting watching him. There's a general sense foreign coaches cannot win in this league, MLS. Mm. That reminds me of what we used to say about foreign coaches
in the English Premier League
in the 1980s and 1990s. But at the same time, MLS is such a jerry-rigged league with so many hidden trapdoors. Altitude, long trips, coach class flights, salary cap, allocation money. It's going to be fascinating, especially watching with the young American players. A very different culture, a very different mindset, not lesser, just different. Very, very different.
I feel for Jason Kreis, obviously a very, very good and successful MLS manager. I'm sure he will latch on somewhere else.
Somewhere easier, shortly. Somewhere easier like Chelsea.
Yeah.
David Moyes, RIP.
Yeah.
At Real, thought your dad.
Yeah.
38 league games, 11 wins, 13 draws, 13 defeats. Took a relegation zone team, led them to safety, then plopped them right back near the relegation zone.
Uh-huh.
A brave adventure.
It's like Tim Sherwoody.
Yeah, comes to an end. He'll always have the memory of the 1-0 win over Lionel Messi's Barcelona.
Wow. That will be at the front of his resume, I would imagine.
Of his game tape, his audition tape.
Onto the Ravens, Rog. Our first Raven from GFOP, Irma. I love that name, Irma, Rog. For many years, I waited to commit myself to an MLS team because the city where I was born, San Antonio, did not have one. I've been a San Antonio Spurs fan from birth, so ideally, I wanted to keep my teams as local as possible. When the San Antonio Scorpions were created in the NASL, I hoped they would turn into an MLS franchise, but nothing happened. I wanted to partake in an MLS as more than just a neutral fan and felt maybe it was time to move on. And so I decided to start dating for teams. After attending some matches and after a lot of consideration, I recently committed to FC Dallas in early 2014, and it's been a great time thus far. However, in the past few days, the parent company of my San Antonio Spurs and others have announced they're buying the local stadium in San Antonio with plans to bring MLS to the Alamo City, and this brings some potential issues for me. First off, I basically just got married to FC Dallas. We have shared playoffs together. I've tweeted hashtag DTID, Dallas till I die, and I take these hashtags seriously. Should I divorce my husband, who I just married, because my first love, who I never thought would be available, is suddenly on the market? Second off, I've been a suffering Arsenal fan for the past 13 years of my life. It's already hard enough to be an Arsenal fan and also be a San Antonio Spurs fan when it comes to the NBA. Could I really support another football team called Spurs? But if the San Antonio Spurs own the team in what I imagine is a similar situation to how Real Madrid and Barcelona have both soccer and basketball teams, then am I obligated to support their football club? Could I resist a silver and black jersey with the Spur as the crest?
God, what a question.
We pretty much have the same version of this raven every week, which is basically, is it okay for me to leave the team I'm currently supporting?
No, but this is
whether
different.
It's MLS,
this is different, though.
Premier League.
This is different, though, David, because this is about MLS, a fast expanding league, which raises difficult questions when new teams just keep cropping up, where vast territories are uncovered.
Yeah.
And then suddenly a new team can just pop up in your market. And then the added complication that NBA team owners are often investing in these soccer teams. This is like marrying a decent partner, hardworking, good-mannered partner, means well, then having your original crush from high school, the one who left you broken-hearted, a wound that you thought would never heal, just come back into your life via Facebook.
I'm sure,
late
though.
Late-night Facebooking.
I'm sure, though.
Don Garber, you're destroying marriages.
I'm sure if we go back, though, Rog,
Garber.
English fans had the same problem in the 1890s and early 20th century.
We have bigger problems, though. Coal pit classes.
When Woolwich Arsenal left South London and went to North London.
We're too worried about the spinning Jenny catching us in the loom.
Yeah, exactly. Not in the South. These are northern problems. These are northern problems.
Strikes.
Yeah.
Yeah, hunger. Those were the problems we were dealing with. We weren't worried about whether Breck Shea was coming back to FC Dallas or not.
I got you.
Oh, I think you've got to stay with FC Dallas.
Yeah.
Think of the theoretical children you've had with FC Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to get official rulings from GFOPs in similar predicaments.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask Don Garber about it at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
He's a marriage wrecker.
Great question.
He is a marriage wrecker.
Great question. The winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers poet, philosopher, soccer scribe, Raven of the Week is Andy from LA. I'm hoping you could help with my current predicament. Recently, we gained a new employee at the office, a perfectly delightful fellow from Great Britain. From what I understand, he's from Northern England. Yeah. I understand from what you understand, because you can't understand a lot of what he says. Splitting time between Leeds and Manchester, or so I've heard. Upon meeting him, I was nearly paralysed with a thickening of excitement, eager to ask him a plethora of England and soccer-related questions. However, I've come to realise I can't ask him these or any other questions. I can't ask him these questions because I quite simply am incapable of understanding his accent.
Wayne Rooney moved into your office.
He sounds like if Robin Williams was doing a Ringo Starr impression while chewing on a rawhide bone. He makes Brad Pitt's character in Snatch sound like an elocution teacher. Throughout the day, whenever I'm in direct contact with him, I find myself using a barrage of nods and non-committal responses. Always a huh or okay rather than a yes or no. Have you heard my yeah, it's to Rog. In hopes that he won't catch on, that I quite literally cannot understand the words coming out of his mouth. I know he's done nothing wrong, nor do I blame him for the seemingly linguistical backflips his tongue is performing that my rudimentary ears cannot pick up. But I was hoping either of you had a solution. My advice, just wait. I was fresh off the boat once, and nobody at the Mercersburg Academy in Pennsylvania understood a word I would say. They would walk past me on the quad, and they'd say to me, hey, how you doing? And I regarded that as a real question. I understood them because I'd watched a lot of American television, and I'd be, oh, terribly well, thank you very much for asking. I mean, spring is just so interesting here in the United States. And nobody understood a word I had to go and say.
Well, same thing. When I first moved to America, no one could understand me.
Yeah.
I worked in an open plan office and was so shy about my inability to communicate that I would only return my phone calls during lunch when everyone was out. So I didn't humiliate myself when I had to tell the people on the other line that it was Roger Bennett on the phone, and they'd say, who? And I'd have to say, Raja Bennett, as if my name was a mediocre Indian restaurant. Give it time. And you and he will soon have a podcast that will be as crap as ours together.
Your international break weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini USA. Oh, there goes a tweed one, Rog. There goes a tweed one. USA versus St. Vincent and the Grenadines, not St. Kitts and Nevis, at 7 p.m. this Friday on ESPN2.
Oh,
in Euro qualifying playoffs, Sweden and Zlatan, Rog, I think he's just been the Swedish player of the year for the 10th year in the succession, take on Denmark Saturday at 2:45 p.m. on Fox Sports 2. And Sunday, Hungary take on Norway at 2:45 p.m. on ESPN. There are many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rog?
A DVD.
Not a book.
This Is England.
Yeah.
Written and directed by the brilliant Shane Meadows.
Yeah.
Coming of age story set in the grim economic climb of Northern England of the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
Set amidst the fraternity of a skinhead gang, it is brutal, raw, It's pretty depressing. Occasionally incredibly funny. Always wonderfully human. Spawned 3 follow-up series. This is England 86, 88, 90. And for me, it was a return to the tenors of the world in which I grew up. For many Americans, it will make you love your country more than Ted Nugent loves your country.
Because I've been having so many BlazerCon dreams, Roger, where I'm not wearing pants, I've been buying a lot of pants recently, and I've been cutting to cord. I've been moving over to corduroy. This is the best time of the year to wear cord, Roger. My cord of choice, the Levi's Men's 511 Skinny Corduroy Pant, Roger. Available in so many colours, more colours than ever before. Not that expensive, Roger. Many of them on sale for like $49. And they'd last forever, made out of really good corduroy. The Levi's Men's 511 Skinny Corduroy Pant in multiple colours.
I'm all in on Masons.
You do, you like Masons,
oh, I'm
don't
not
you?
Masons.
Australian, right?
Italian.
Oh, they are? I thought they were Australian.
I think they're Italian.
That's good marketing.
They're the Christian Vieri of Italian Australians.
Very, very good. Rog, you can now watch entire episodes of our crap TV show, We're Sorry, on NBC Sports Live Extra, Apple TV and Roku. It's also up on our website, meninblazers.com. Also on meninblazers.com, a place to sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner, Guinness. Check out our Spotify account, men_in_blazers. We've just posted a BlazerCon playlist, meninblazers.wickerspaces.com/. That's a wonder of the modern world, Rog. Follow us on Twitter, at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, at meninblazers. On Instagram, at meninblazers, at embassy_Davies, and like us on Facebook. We've got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOP's Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. And you can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho, your emails to meninblazers@gmail.com.
Can I just say, yeah. Alexander Ovechkin is a very, very funny, wonderful man.
Huh.
I enjoyed being with him greatly. And our guest on the next Men in Blazers is Mr. Terry Crews.
Oh, can't wait for that, Rog.
We can talk about Diego Costa and deodorant with him.
I was confused there because I thought you were suggesting that Alexander Ovechkin is one of the GFOPs who maintains our subreddit, Rog.
I like to think.
Vendorpunk Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
Corduroy is coming.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung fu fight in America, and if you're traveling to BlazerCon, safe travels and Godspeed.
Bon voyage.